Welcome back to Aware. Hi, this is Lisa Gar. That is Tribe. The song is Tribe from a group called Sounds of Blackness. We're just picking it up in the middle of the afternoon here on KPFK. We're trying anyway. Joining me next is Crystal Parks. She is a mystical activist. This is a topic, a title I've given her. I don't know if people have called you this before, but I love that title, mystical activist. Thanks for joining us, Crystal.
Thank you.
Great to have you with me. Crystal has really, I would say, for the past several decades in your life, has really committed herself to social justice. She stood up in the face of civil disobedience, is what it's been termed as, while standing for what she believes in, all the way from animal rights to peace activism. And you've been marching, and you've spent a long time in jail with your buddies, and it's been quite an experiential life you've had, isn't it?
Yes.
Why are you called to do this in your life? What is your purpose? What is your calling?
I think when my family moved to Mexico when I was 7, I was confronted with injustice there. And in particular, I had this little friend who, when I was 10, she lived down the street from me in a cardboard house. And by that I mean that the house was made out of cardboard strung across like a clothesline, and that's where she lived. And her name was Maria, and we were just the greatest of friends. I didn't care that she didn't have shoes or clean hair, and she didn't seem to care that I did. And what I remember about her was her wonderful, exuberant personality. And one day I took her to my country club, my parents' country club, and took her swimming. And in Mexico, in the summer, there's a lot of rain. So this was happened to be a typical rainy summer day, so nobody was around. We had the pool all to ourselves, and she'd never been in a swimming pool before. So I was teaching her how to hold her breath underwater, and we were playing and having a great time until the portero came along. And he kicked her out and insulted her and told her she wasn't allowed to be there. And that was my first real awareness of economic injustice, because we were allowed to have guests, but apparently this was because she was poor, that was someone I was not allowed to have. And that changed my life, seeing my dear friend treated like that, and I just committed myself inside my heart to give my life to those who don't have a voice, and to try to make the world better so that kind of treatment doesn't continue.
You are a very special woman. I can see that this still elicits emotion in you now as it does me. I don't blame you. There is a certain amount of racism and discontent everywhere that we look these days, and I do believe that it's always up to us and the individual to find out what that means to us and then find out what we can do about it. But people get busy, get into their daily lives. They live in survival. We live in big cities. We get away from our callings and away from our purpose, and then we go back and read books and listen to radio shows like this to find out what that was, right? Why does that happen? How does the distraction happen, and how do you get back to what it is that really calls you?
Well, I think the distraction happens because we have a culture who is constantly feeding us with illusions of where happiness lies. So you can't drive down the freeway without seeing billboards telling you you need a bigger house, you need to be a certain way, you need to look a certain way, and it's all around us. Our culture is full of illusions of where happiness lies. And for myself, I had been very active, intensely active in resistance to nuclear weapons, and I became painfully and humbly aware that I had a lot of violence inside of me. Mm. I had bombs inside of me that were dangerous. And so I decided, you know, I really need to do the difficult work of disarmament. That if I'm going to do peacemaking with any kind of integrity, then I have to be peaceful inside. Someone has said, you cannot overcome your enemy until you rid yourself of what you find despicable in them. And so I decided to to do some solitary work. I moved into a small one-room cabin on 160 acres of wilderness land in the, high in the Colorado Rockies, and I thought I'd be there for a couple of months. I ended up being there for 2 years, and I only had to work one day a week. I worked in Aspen cleaning condos for the ski resort, and the rest of the time I spent in nature. Walking in nature, listening, I would sit for hours under a ponderosa pine, and I discovered that trees do talk, but they take a long time, and you have to listen like a good lover. They take their time, and I would spend my days watching, for example, an ant carry its dead brother, who was twice its size, or watch beavers make a dam. And marmots played. I had a porch outside my little cabin, and I had a faded old couch on my porch. And marmots used to like to sit on my couch and face the sun with their little faces. And as the sun would dance across the sky, their little bodies would move with the sun. And after 2 years of this kind of deep listening, I discovered that at the core of everything that exists, every blade of grass, every marmot, every soaring eagle, every deer, every tree, every little baby like your darling daughter, everything has at its core a vibration and energy of joy. And that's the language of the universe. Celebration is what it's all about. And that's when I, you know, to get in touch with that, I realized if I want to work for peace, for justice, for the environment, for animals, if I want to do it in harmony with the same energy that burst forth the galaxies and put the sun in the sky and the moon and the ocean, then I too have to be in that energy and vibration of joy.
And it takes a person like you to be able to bring that from the language into your physical body and to go to a place like Thailand in a refugee camp and stand up for women who seem to disappear, and they won't if they're with an American woman.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, you're talking about two different things. In Thailand, I worked in the refugee camps. The women who were being disappeared were the Guatemalan Mayan women during the horrible, horrible civil war taking place in Guatemala. And so my work there was to be a very, very visible American presence. I looked very white, very blonde. And that was a gift to them because I would stand out. So my job was to, when they, this one woman in particular, was on the Army's hit list because she was active in bringing resistance to the Army, demanding accountability for her lost husband. And that's what happens. It was mostly the men, the fathers, the uncles, the sons who would be disappeared. And so because she was active in protesting against the government, these disappearances, her life was in danger and that of her daughter too. So my job was to go with her wherever she went. So when she would walk down the street, I would walk on the side next to the side. I would walk on the outer side next to the sidewalk, because when you're disappeared, they just come around the street in a van and grab you. So I would be a shield. I was then a shield for both her and her daughter. So when her daughter went to school, I went with her, and I would sit outside the gate of the school. So that'd be a very visible presence, because her daughter was in danger. You know, that's how they would get to her. And so it was very successful. It was very successful, our presence there. And it wasn't just American, it was an international presence. I stayed in a house with people from the United States, from Portugal, from Switzerland, from Germany. All of us were there for the one purpose, to offer our education, our nationality, our privilege as a gift to those who were in danger of losing their lives. And we wanted our action to make it a little less likely that they would be kidnapped and murdered.
You know, it is such an inspiring thing to hear from someone like you, and especially in wherever people are in their lives right now, driving their car in the middle of their work day or taking a break for lunch and listening to the show. Doesn't it remind you, as you're listening, as to why you do the things that you do, that your heart calls you to do? Doesn't this give you a sense of fulfillment that whatever you've just done in terms of smiling at someone or donated to a good cause or helped somebody across the street, doesn't that help you, help remind you that there's a real reason for living, and the real reason isn't getting to the ATM and running to the gas station and getting home and cramming the family and stuff like that? And doesn't this help you realize that? I'm just getting that sense right now. I just wanted to share that with my listeners. But this vibration of joy you're talking about, to go back to that for a second, I find that that is lost in a lot of people I come in contact with during my various walks of life in my days. How do you help reinstall that in somebody who may really appear to have lost it?
Very simple. All you do is you follow your greatest joy. You follow your bliss. Joseph Campbell told us that. That's the secret. The trouble is we get so full of activities, we don't know really what we want to do. But if we take the time to really focus on what do we love more than anything else, what are we wild and passionate about, you know, and then you focus on that. And unfortunately, in this day, everything, almost everything you can list as sources of our greatest joy, that which we love the most, your daughter, for example, is at risk in this culture. And so when you realize that that which you love, for example, for me it would be elephants, that which I love is at risk by the poachers, if you love it, you'll sacrifice whatever it takes to save them, to protect them, as you would with your daughter.
Oh, yeah. I would sacrifice myself. But you, let's talk about civil disobedience, and let's talk about how you have been arrested for many of these causes that you've stood up for and believed in. What do you see as the real system there? I mean, there are obviously law enforcers doing their jobs according to their protocol, but then there are people who stand up for their passions, who the law enforcers can obviously, you know, they have passions in their lives, but they're following this protocol. What do you see as the problem? Where is the breakdown there?
I'm not sure I understand the question. Help me.
Essentially, what is the problem with civil disobedience? What I see a conflict where people are passionately standing up for what they believe in, yet they're being thrown in jail for it. How does that encourage people to stand up for what they believe in? Because many people are afraid of, you know, this fear-based law system that we have here, and say, oh, no, I couldn't possibly march because I might get in jail, and then I get thrown in jail, then I'm going to have to go through the misdemeanor, and then I won't be able to get a job, and it'll ruin my credit, and, you know, they'll go through this whole scenario in their mind because our system is based on fear. It's number one fear of Americans is jail, second being death, third being public speaking. But, I mean, let's talk about that whole idea.
I think the problem there is that people who are looking at the consequences aren't in touch with their heart and what they really love. If you really love something, it doesn't matter what the consequences are. For example, this one action I did, I was facing 8 years, and we had, myself and my three co-defendants had decided we would defend ourselves. But if you defend yourselves, you're more likely, you know, to do the 8 years. But I felt I have to defend myself, because then in the courtroom I can talk about the immorality of nuclear weapons. In this case, it was against nuclear weapons. If a lawyer defends me, then it's basically on a technicality and getting me off on a technicality. That to me was shameful. I wanted to speak forcefully about the horror of nuclear weapons. And I went to meet with a lawyer friend who came to visit me. And I asked her, if I defend myself, how much time could I get? She said, you'd probably get the 8 years. And on the table was a newspaper. It was springtime, and there were swimming in the water swans. And I looked at those swans, and I asked myself, are they worth 8 years of my life? And I said, yes, they are worth 8 years of my life. And of course, by implication, everything else that swans represent, the natural world, the children who are threatened, all of life. And so I defended myself. So it's a matter of, if you really get in touch with what you love, it's not a sacrifice.
But that is, you bring up a good point about the court system and our judicial system. It is strongly in favor of the system and not in favor of the person. And sometimes by default, you wind up admitting guilt just to get off on a minor, you know, smaller amount of money, as opposed to spending years in jail and completely defaming yourself and your record and your ability to ever work again, just because you're complying with the system. I've seen it happen many, many times. A friend of mine's going through it right now, where he's having to pay some $8,000 just so he won't get a felony, which he had absolutely nothing to do with. There's a whole campaign going on of these kids who were named as accomplices in a murder. They were completely innocent. They've been in juvenile hall for 7 years, and there's a whole campaign to get these kids out of juvie, and they're about to transfer into adult prison, and we're going to be doing a whole thing on this during the fund drive. But it's, you know, this constant injustice happening in our judicial system. You stand up for what you believe in, you get completely screwed over on the other side of it, but yet you still continue to do this. How do you deal with that conflict? What happened, by the way?
Well, interesting enough, we all got less than a year. So, you know, it was just a real vindication. The point is, we are human by following our conscience, no matter what it costs.
Mm-hmm. That's,
you know, you see, in Nazi Germany, burning the Jewish population was totally legal. It was legal. And what is happening in this country with the development of nuclear weapons? We have 30,000 nuclear weapons.
In the U.S.?
In the United States.
Thank you.
And it is legal. The planning
Yet
of...
Yet, to bomb other countries for
yeah.
their right. Okay.
Yeah.
Just making that clear.
Yeah.
But continue.
So...
Sorry.
I advocate more that people follow what their deepest love is and accept whatever consequences. Sometimes that will be civil disobedience. Sometimes that will be changing your lifestyle. Sometimes that will be having to live very simply. It'll have different consequences. But the joy of life, the purpose of life, is to follow our greatest loves, whatever that may be. And that's what we're here for. And, you know, accept the consequences. Oh, I should tell you, what I've discovered in jail is, yeah, you know, you're behind bars. But the one thing they can't take away is that inner place of joy that bubbles up, no matter where you are. What a great discovery. It makes you feel like you're invincible when you realize when you're following your conscience, and that's the key, then that place of joy, that place of connection with the source of life can never be taken away.
So true when you're following your conscience. Very, very true. I'm reminded of a friend who's currently going through the discovery of cancer in his body and is dealing with that challenge of a life-threatening illness. And where do you go in your mind when that type of, you know, discovery is made? No matter what assistance you have, you are still left with yourself and your relationship with your mind and your inner conscience. And where do you go there? And it all goes back to that inner source of joy. Where is it? Where did it come from? Where might it have gone? And that's a really, really good point. That's a great point.
Yeah, for example, when I was imprisoned, I refused to work. So they put me in solitary confinement. And I have claustrophobia. So it was really psychological torment to be in a solitary cell. But one of the things that I discovered was that in the presence of that kind of horror, if you go deep enough into the pain, you discover the presence of something else, which is joy. For example,
wow.
I was in the area of the jail called the hole, and there were four of us in the hole, and we all faced a common area. We were each in a cell. It had a metal door on it with a little slot that they would put the food trays through. You had your own toilet in there. And in the common area was a shower, and we were supposed to get out every day to take a shower. Well, because I have claustrophobia, you know, I was just like Pavlov's dog. Every time a guard walked by, I'd be up at the door wanting to get out because it was so tormenting to me. Well, one day, they hadn't come to get us out. They'd only taken two out for their 15-minute shower, and it was getting toward lockdown time. When the guard appeared, there was only time for one of us to get out. There were two of us left. So the guard came to my door, put in a key, was starting to let me out. And I said to her, "The woman in the next cell has not gotten out yet. Let her out instead." And so she did. She locked my door. And what I discovered in making that choice of being present, taking on the pain of my claustrophobia, and letting the other woman get out instead, the claustrophobia didn't go away. But what I discovered underneath it, bubbling up, was an incredible joy.
Wow.
And then the other thing that happened was, as I told you, there's this little slot where they put the food through, and there's a little ledge there. And I put on the ledge a little bottle of shampoo. And the prisoner next to me, who never would receive that gift, this time she received it. And so she took the shampoo, she used it. And there was no words between us, but the deepest communication, the deepest camaraderie that bars, concrete, cannot destroy.
Crystal Parks, you're an amazing, amazing woman. Thank you so much for sharing your words with us this afternoon.
You're welcome.
You are an inspiration, and you deserve to be a voice out there. And I hope that I know that you've touched my heart, and I know that you've touched many that are listening right now. Crystal's written a book. It's called Reenchanting the World, A Call to Mystical Activism. And right now you can email her if you want to get a copy of this. And her email address, I left in the other room. What is that?
The email address.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's crystalparks@earthlink.net. And spell that for everyone.
My name is spelled KRISTALPARKS. There's no C and no Y in Crystal.
KRISTALPARKS@earthlink.net. Thank you. You've been a joy to speak to.
Thank
you. An upliftment and a very enlightening message in the middle of the afternoon.
Thank you very much.
Many, many blessings to you.